Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Yes, that's right. It is the Mole Patrol, sans Josh Wiggler, because this week we are going to be digging into all the things about The Mole Season 2 that you already know if you have seen the whole show. So it's me, Jessica Lise, and I am here, of course, with Brooklyn Zed. We are two people who have seen the entirety of the show. Turn back now if you have not seen the end of Mole Season 2, because we're going to spoil it all the way up to the rafters. It is going to be spoiled AF. There will be no stone unspoiled. Get out now. Get out, get out, get out.
Yes, leave. Preserve yourself. Go enjoy the rest of the show, either right now, binge the rest of it and come back to this podcast, or enjoy it at Josh's speed. If he can have the self-control to only watch one episode at a time when we're having such a great time, you can do it too. Treasure this moment. It will. You only get it once. You can only be shocked and awed by everything that is yet to come the one time.
It's true.
Yeah. But if you have seen it all, you're here with us. We're going to have some fun.
Yeah. There is one moment of shock and awe that I have watched on a weekly basis since The Mole 2 dropped on Netflix, and it never loses its power. Mm-hmm. But honestly, you all need to have that first experience with it. And yeah. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, get out now and come back later. I want to highlight, actually, I had a great Twitter exchange with, I believe it was, now I'm going to look it up to make sure that I have the right person here. I had a Twitter exchange with a listener who was up to the final five, and he was like, I must be doing something wrong because I don't know what this moment is that you keep talking about. And I was like, no, buddy, you're not there yet. You got to keep going. He's like, but I'm already at the final five. What is left to watch? And I said,
three more episodes. Yeah.
So yeah, shout out to Chris Brannigan, who tweeted at me very puzzled as to what is the moment. And you're there, buddy.
In contrast to Josh, who thinks everything is the moment, because it's also ridiculous.
I mean, we do get a few people tweeting at me being like, I've seen the whole thing. I don't know what the moment is. And because there are so many great things, and that's also a fair point.
Yeah.
But I liked Michael Kay's encapsulation of what this is. He's like, just to make sure I'm on the same page, the amazing moment you're talking about is the one where the player hears the thing in the place, right? Because that is the moment that has stuck with me for 20 years. And I'm like, yes, buddy, it is the thing in the place.
Yes, that's the exactly one where the player hears the thing in the place. That is the moment we are talking about.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what that means, I don't know why you're still here. Yeah, you need to go find out what the thing in the place is.
We've given you three full minutes of filler before we give away anything.
We are about to abolish the filibuster.
Yes.
Somebody's got to do it.
Somebody's got to do it.
And it's going to be us here on Mole Patrol. That's what everybody was hoping for.
Because nobody ever invited Joe Manchin to Mole Patrol. Because he is the mole.
It's true.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So, yeah, we have given you one full cycle of tiny bubbles worth of filler before we give away the important stuff. So I'm going to say, if you haven't ducked out now, I don't want you adding us that you got spoiled, because we told you it's called the spoiler special. We said it in the first second of the podcast. We gave you 3 minutes where we talked about nothing but the fact that we're going to spoil your little butts off. So here you are. Bill is the mole.
There. Bill is the mole.
Boom. I spoiled it. Now now we have to backtrack and we have to talk about Zed. Talk about the fact that Josh doesn't know and Josh doesn't suspect. And
not at
how,
all.
How is that
not
possible?
Remotely? I don't know, but it is such a treat because I was so furious that he pegged Catherine from the start last season. It is very pleasing to have him thoroughly confused and suspecting different people each week, and to be way off with Bribs. And he doesn't think it's Bribs anymore, but he's not gotten any more correct in the meantime.
And I've heard a couple of people have theorized that the reason that he's not catching on to it is because he's so committed to his bit.
His Charlie voice. Yeah.
It's like Bill is Charlie and Charlie wasn't the mole. So therefore, Bill is not the mole. It's a transitive property.
Yeah. Well, works for me. All the more entertaining for us to get to watch his incorrect guesses and suspicions in the meantime.
Yeah. And honestly, I was as worried as you were, Zed, with the first time he said Catherine is the mole. I'm like, how are we ever going to get him to watch season two now? Because Bill is so more obvious as the mole than Catherine ever was. And if he got Catherine in the first episode, he's going to watch the first 30 seconds, be like, there's your mole.
Yeah.
I don't know how he did. He isn't doing it. It's baffling, but it is everything we wanted the podcast to be when we first signed on to do it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's the fun of it for us, right? Like, yeah, of course, we love talking about this show that we love so much. But the real joy is in having someone along for the ride who hasn't experienced it before. And when you guess them all right off the bat, even if you don't know that you're right, that certainly takes some of the fun out of it for us, because we just have to be like, well, I don't know if you're right or not. You're definitely right.
It's much harder to lie about someone being right when they don't know if they're right, that it is for someone to be completely wrong and continue to ask us if they're right.
Go along with those theories and be like, yeah, that makes sense. That could be it. That is suspicious.
Yeah. It's kind of letting them do the theorizing. Otherwise, you know, we have to do the theorizing for him about why is Catherine not the mole.
Right.
It's much easier to try to prove an unknown than to disprove a known.
Yes. Very well put.
That's the kind of night it is. We're going to put things very well. And again, I think my favorite thing that has happened on this podcast so far happened in last week's episode when there was literally one of the clues to the mole and Josh highlighted the fact that it was a clue to the mole
and did not bill. Yeah.
And he did not know that he was lampshading an actual clue to the mole.
Correct.
How did that happen? That's amazing.
Oh, man. Incredible. I was like, yes, you are correct. A dollar bill. And they're going to count that as a clue later. Maybe he thought it was too obvious given how not obvious the clues are. I don't know.
Well, this was something that people highlighted for us very early on, that midway through the series, apparently the production staff was getting really upset about the fact that nobody was guessing who the mole was, and they started putting more and more obvious clues. But honestly, that's the most obvious one, because the rest of the clues are total bullshit.
Yeah. I remember in other seasons, I know it's things like, we put the mole's area code in this one frame of the intro. And it's like, okay, sure. This is a hint to who the winner is, because we highlighted this word this one time. I know that this season, one of them is like, Bill is in front of a picture of a ship in one confessional, and that means that he's the mole. And it's like, what are you talking about? They do confessionals all over the place with different people in front of different settings all the time, but we're supposed to know that this specific one is a clue that means something.
Yeah, and the viewer clues are kind of ridiculous. There literally is one, I think, in the first episode where you pause it and like they've rejiggered the night sky to show Pisces, which is Bill's zodiac sign.
Right.
Oh, of course, Bill's zodiac sign is Pisces. I knew that.
Yeah, and you have to connect a lot of dots or stars, I guess, to pick up on all the clues.
Yep. Anderson Cooper is munching an apple, which is the official fruit of Washington State, where Bill lives.
Okay. He also eats a sandwich and drinks a bunch of wine. Are those clues?
No. They are only clues to Anderson's mental state while he's filming it.
Yes. Oh, man. I wonder if speaking of things that Anderson consumes, when we get to the episode, I think not next week, but the week after, with the wine smashing, if Josh will think that's the moment when Anderson gets drunk with the contestants and none of them can pour wine. Is that the funniest thing we've ever seen? It's pretty funny, but it's not the moment.
Yeah, I feel like that's going to be another instance of him being absolutely certain, and we have to be like, no, it's better.
Still coming.
Yeah, it's going to be like, how could it be any better? How is this show get better and better? And it's like, it just does.
It just does.
I don't know, after Tiny Bubbles, all other television for the next two decades is just chasing that high.
Yep. Oh, man. Welcome to my funhouse. These are my dolls.
Quit looking at me, you harlot.
So weird. I love it so much. I can't wait. Thing. Oh, you guys, we cannot wait. We've been like for, you know, over a year now, excited to get to this episode. And we're still, you know, a month away from it, but it's coming.
But it's I can see it in the distance. I can hear it.
Yeah, and we're getting close.
Like, yeah. And I also want to do a shout out to the Extra Hot Great podcast. And I can provide a link to this if somebody at me wants to know. A couple months ago, before we kicked off this podcast, the Extra Hot Great podcast is a segment called The Canon, where you can send in your pitch for this sort of Hall of Fame of TV episodes. And you explain why you think this is an iconic episode of television, and they watch it and then they weigh in on whether they agree or not. And I unsuccessfully pitched Tiny Bubbles to The Canon, and I don't know how any episode of television makes it if that one didn't, but they thought it was a little bit slow and they rejected it. But my pitch for that episode is in an episode of Extra Hot Great. And then they later on called me to be a guest host on their show one episode, which was on my bucket list. And I know that's super lame. I didn't tell them it was on my bucket list, you know. But anyways, Ed, I feel like we have two things we want to accomplish in this spoiler special, apart from ragging on Josh for not guessing who the mole is yet. We have kind of two main bits of information for the spoiler special that we wanted to break down in greater detail. And one is the immense amount of feedback that we got from our listeners, which I believe you've sifted through and compiled. And we want to address a lot of your questions. We want to thank everybody for writing in, because you have some very thoughtful notes that we want to make sure we definitely touch on. And then later on, after we've gone through the feedback, I have another source of information on this season that I wanted to dig into. And that was the amazing book, which is available on Kindle Unlimited. If you are a Kindle person, don't give more money to Jeff Bezos than you absolutely have to. But you may find out there a copy of Reflections of the Mole by Bill McDaniel. So even Amazon is not safe to spoil when you're trying to avoid mole spoilers. Like, don't type in The Mole Season 2 into Amazon or you will be spoiled. But Bill wrote a book about it because he, for the next 6 years after The Mole completed filming, he had nothing better to do. So he wrote a book about it. And he's a character, is Bill.
I believe it. And yeah, Jess read the book, so I didn't have to.
Yeah. The minute I got to his note about how his parents got married when his mother was 14 and his father was 24, because his dad felt like the best way to find a wife is to get them young and raise them right. I don't want Zed to have anything to do with this. They should not have to read this book.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And discussing how Dorothy was the typical inscrutable Chinese person. I'm like, yikes. Whoa. Yeah.
Yikes.
Big yikes. It was a different time, I guess. It was 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Still not okay. It wasn't okay 15 years ago. Not okay now. But what is okay is the incredible amount of mole trivia. And he is a funny guy. Mm-hmm. Some of this stuff is very, very funny. And I have some highlights of behind the scenes content that we're definitely going to want to go into. But I think first we should probably dive into this large amount of feedback that we've collected.
Sure. Well, to what you said, we have some feedback from Matt, who I know also sent us an Ander song. If you have mole themed, mole parody songs, we will play them at the end of the season. So you can be thinking about that and get those into us at your leisure. He had some feedback about the book, which we can talk about when we get to the book part. He also has an elaborate theory about the bribe situation that I don't know if I even totally follow because I am not a math person. But for those of you who are math people out there, and because Matt went to this work, I'm going to read out what he wrote. He said, "My math nerd side couldn't help but think about whether Olavia made the right decision from an expected value standpoint. First, when she was offered an exemption or to add 15K to the pot, what was the value of the exemption at that point? If you assume that everyone has an equal chance of winning, her expected value in that episode was 1/8 of $236,000 or $29,500. But if she advances to the next episode free with an exemption, her expected value increases to 1/7 or about $34,000. To break even and give up the exemption, the pot would have had to increase to $270,000. So anything less than $35,000 added would not be worth it. She was correct to keep the exemption. For the bribe, it's similar. Her expected value is 1/7, which comes out to $38,000. So it seems like a no-brainer to take the $50,000, especially with it guaranteed. On the other hand, we know the pot will go up over time. She doesn't know how much, but her expected value works out to $90,000. So thinking about it that way, the better mathematical decision would be to stay in the game. But nevertheless, you can't blame her for taking it, even though she didn't realize that most of the other players thought she was the mole. And one more thing. Why would the contestants put her last on their lists again? Don't they learn?"
Well, first of all, Matt, if you've never auditioned for Deal or No Deal, you should probably go on that show because that seems like it's your wheelhouse.
Yeah, no kidding.
This is some Deal or No Deal math for sure. The point that I think this is all fascinating and well-reasoned, and I think Olavia probably had something similar in her head, at least when she was thinking about the exemption, because the number she gives as the number that she would have taken to give up the exemption is $30,000.
Right.
So I suspect some similar calculus was going on in her head. But as to the expected value of the quit, I think she doesn't know how much money they're going to wind up with.
Right.
And she could very well be going home the next episode and have no shot at it. So I think her expected value at the time is less than what she is offered.
Yeah, I agree. And it really is. Did you come for the experience? Did you come for the money? If you came for both, which is more important? Because $50,000 is guaranteed sitting there in front of you, versus however much time you'll spend, maybe or maybe not, earning more money that you may or may not then gain in the future, because your odds of winning are so slim. So I think it was probably the right decision to make. But I also understand that, like, you're in this like once in a lifetime unique experience. It's got to be hard to walk away from that if you've come primarily for the experience, not for the money. But I don't think anybody blames her for taking it. Although, to Matt's point also, she was in a good position because so many people suspected her of being the mole. And since she knows that's not the case, she had a bit of an advantage over some of the other players in terms of odds on the quiz.
Yeah. And I can pull up, like, we could talk about her contributions. The great thing about Bill's book is that he had everybody from the show, minus one person, which we'll get to in a minute. But she said that she had no idea anybody thought she was the mole. And she was just stressed out. She felt really badly that people didn't like her. And I think most of that was just, if someone's offered you a huge amount of money to leave the game, and it's people you like and you're having a good time and you're enjoying the gameplay and you really feel like it's the experience, then that's one thing. But if you're stressed out and you're breaking out in hives and you're tired all the time, you're not sleeping or eating, yeah, take the 50 grand and run.
Yeah.
And she said she liked the travel experience, and she definitely, she made good friends, but she also, it was more stressful than she intended it to be. And so I think that really I think that's true with a lot of television shows, honestly. You go on any of these reality shows, and we are speaking to an audience of people that have seen dozens and dozens of seasons of this, and a lot of them look at it and think, that's got to be really fun, and I could do better than these people, and I want this experience. But I think what you can tell people a million times, and they won't know until they're on the show, is that it's not really fun. It is work. And every amount of money you make on those shows, you earn. They are getting their money's worth.
Yeah, because you're so isolated from your typical support network and whatever tactics you might use to like take care of your mental health. And now I think even more so than 20 years ago, like we're all so plugged in to being able to communicate with anybody at any time. You know, when I grew up, we had to like, you know, call my grandma long distance at certain hours when it was cheaper rather than just like sending a text message at any time of the day. So like, we're so connected to each other now that like you go on any of these shows and you don't have any of that contact. And in a show like The Mole, you don't know who you can trust. You don't know who's out to get you. You want to make genuine connections with people because that's just like human instinct. But there's in games like this, there's always that layer of, well, can I actually trust them? Are they going to backstab me? In this case, are they literally the mole out to sabotage everything I'm trying to do? And so that makes it really hard. I'm sure it feels like very isolating, even in a group of people. And then to know that you're the least liked among those people has got to be extremely difficult.
Yeah, but that's to Matt's next question, why would the contestants put her last on their lists again? Don't they learn? I think that if you're asked to rank everybody once and then you rank them again, this is like sending someone to Exile Island to look for the idol.
Mm-hmm.
You need to keep your rankings the same because if you've already pissed off one person, you might as well not piss off a second person.
Yeah.
Or in Big Brother this season, when they keep putting the same person up on the block and it's killing her and she's really upset about it every time. But it's like, yeah, I could just do it. You know, it's happening. But if I put some other random person up, then you're both mad at me.
Right. So, it's like all of the negative energy or animosity is concentrated in one place rather than being spread out and creating a whole bunch of enemies.
Yeah. And it sucks to be that person, but I would certainly have, if I'd had to rank people the second time, I would certainly have done it the same way.
Yeah. And I think it did vary a little bit for some people, but ultimately it was sort of like ranked choice voting or like the inverse of ranked choice voting almost of like Bill. I think Bill and Olavia tied for last on one of the weeks, but then more people had Olavia like second to last than people had Bill. So ultimately she ended up being the aggregate least liked player. Matt, that sounded like a math word. I hope I was using it right. Yeah, so I think they, whether it was strategic or it was just honest, I think they made the right strategic decision, keeping it the same.
Yeah, I still don't understand why they did it twice. I guess just to rule out the fact that, you know, if they'd ranked Bill last, they would have had to play the game differently.
Somebody had a theory about that. I'm going to see if I can find.
We
got some feedback from somebody with a theory about why they did it 2 weeks in a row. I can't recall who it is, and I don't know if I have it specifically in our spoiler feedback, but I know someone's thought was, it was like a test case to see if Bill would end up last. And if he didn't, then they would be willing to do the bribe. Because if he ended up last, they wouldn't want to do it a second time because they couldn't offer him the bribe because he would turn it down. And the thought was that that would look suspicious. My apologies to whoever's theory that was, that I am not able to properly credit you in this moment. But I think that's a good theory.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's the only thing I can think of that actually makes any sense. I feel like what might have been more fun is if they just had everybody rank everybody every single week and not done anything with it until the point where they did.
Mm-hmm.
I almost think that introducing this piece of it that late in the game was, it came out of left field to me.
Yeah, it's also interesting that it didn't matter who was ranked highest like that. They don't even tell us as the viewers who would have won the popularity contest.
Yeah.
So yeah. They don't give anybody any power or any like social capital in that way. It's only who are we going to offer an exemption to? Who are we going to offer the bribe to?
Yeah. And I feel like that's information I would have wanted to use.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody should have had their notebooks out that whole time.
Yeah. Maybe if this was a more contemporary show, that information would have come into play also.
Yeah. And, you know, they do it in the circle. I feel like this is like analogous to the voting in the circle.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
Related to this discussion, which I feel like is kind of about the rules, Connor wrote in and said, I saw Anderson Cooper give an interview where he mentioned he thought the rules of the mole were too complex. At the time, was this a sentiment people shared? As some reality TV obsessed goons, I think it could be difficult for us to view it from the casual's perspective there.
It's a good point, especially given how complex everything is now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was kind of the sentiment back when the show was on, was that it was harder to pick up how this show worked than it was. Like Big Brother and Survivor at the time were basically just every week they're going to vote somebody out.
Mm-hmm.
And like even Big Brother was even simpler than that for its first season. Every week they're going to vote. You're going to vote someone out. And, you know, American Idol was the same thing. Every week, right, Everybody's going to vote, and then whoever gets the lowest number of votes goes home. And this was different because people weren't voting, and it was the actual strategy of how you play this game well and how you reason out how you're supposed to figure out who is the mole. It gets very into the weeds, and it's hard to depict. Like, when we get to Bill's book, I'll talk a little bit more about this, but when I read about how people were tackling it, I'm like, oh, right. But you can't show any of that. And it's frustrating.
Interesting.
It becomes a lot of people sitting around talking and they're all taking notes. You can't show their notes. It does become really hard to tell the story. I think when you're in the game, you could probably reason out how to play it. But it's another one of those games I feel like I would rather play it than watch other people play it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of similar to something that like a factor that really got me into Survivor when I came back to it as an adult several years ago was this idea of like playing an idol, and playing it may say to your allies, I don't trust you. Do you want to, like, if you're the person with the idol, do you want to do that and like maybe make your allies less sure of like your confidence in them versus do you need to like protect your own safety? And I think that sort of like thinking through the steps of, well, if I do this to protect myself, how does that look to other people and how will that factor into like how they work with me or don't in the future, is strategy that we take pretty for granted at this point in the evolution of Survivor and as people who watch a lot of reality television, but that is, I think a pretty inherent aspect of strategy in the mole is like thinking through, well, do I do something that looks suspicious so people think it's me? But if it's too overt, will people think that I'm trying to look suspicious and then they'll know that it's not me? And those like layers of what is like the correct amount of duplicitousness to bring into the game if you are not the mole versus if you are the mole is like very advanced strategy for so early in reality television.
Yeah. And I think there's also there's a segment of the viewership that was ready for that and was primed for it and was excited about it. And then it was just, I remember the feeling being when we knew it wasn't coming back, a lot of people were just upset. They're like, this is the only show that does this. This is so high concept and everything else feels strategically way less interesting than this. Mm-hmm. And now I think this is why I'm unsure that a mole reboot is going to be the right thing for this audience in this day and age, because we have that now. Like, you know, Survivor is that much more complex. And apparently, like, people say that the thing they like about Big Brother is the fact that it's they don't have to worry about people being stressed out and starving and dirty and tired. All they have to do is strategize. And so it's strategically like it's gotten crazy complex. Mm-hmm. And I think nowadays we're all up on that level. And so what is the new mole going to look like?
Right.
I think, and I'm sure we're all going to watch it. We're going to be excited to have it. Everybody's consuming that much more content, but it's not filling that hole in the same way. Mm-hmm. So I will be interested to see how it does and how people respond to it. And also the kinds of people that are going to go on this show are going to have digested two decades worth of this kind of stuff.
Right.
What's that game going to look like?
I mean, hopefully, I think a lot of it comes out in confessionals. And I listened to the David versus Goliath recap recently. And they were talking about how, like, the show is so, that season is so successful because they have such great narrators and they have Christian who can break down, like, the strategy of what's happening and where votes are going and how people are acting and why to, like, help make sense of the very complex motivations and actions of the players in the game. And I think if the creators of the new mole have that sense of, we really need the players in the game to be able to walk us through the strategy and talk about what's happening in the game and not just say, I miss my family, I'm really tired, I can't believe my friend went home. Like, we need, and that's what most of the talking heads in the mole, the original mole are.
Yeah.
It's like, gosh, this game is hard. It's harder than I thought it would be. We've been gone a long time. I'm not really sure what's going to happen next. And it's like, yeah, okay, great.
That's a good point. Because, yeah, there's all this strategy that everybody is employing that you're not seeing any of it on the TV. And I guess some of that is because if you did too much of that, it tips your hand as to who is not the mole.
True.
Because especially this season where you had Bill really not doing anything in terms of strategy and having to write his journal the night before they all had to give them up because he had a blank journal, where you have people like Darwin have like
filled it. Yeah,
they've filled it. And Patrick, who's like,
he's on like his second journal.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you knew the second that they said Patrick was over strategizing all the time, it's like, that guy would not be the mole because he does not have time to do anything other than like Kevin Spacey in Seven.
And yeah.
Boy, there's a lot.
That's a good point that, like, it is tricky. I mean, it would mean more sort of like artificial confessionals from the mole, because you do get them from Bill in this season being like, I'm very suspicious of Dorothy because of this, that, and the other thing. Because they've got to have confessionals from all of the players being suspicious. But maybe he can talk about, I don't know, about how they were able to get the car through the greenhouse door or whatever the task is. But that is a challenge that I guess the mole has in a way that other shows don't. Let's see. What else do we have? We did talk about, we have some feedback from Ben about Josh not guessing that Bill is the mole.
As well we should.
I don't even think he is on Josh's radar, correct? Did the editing do a good job of hiding the fails contributed by Bill? I'm not sure if it's just my retrospective memory, but things like buying the ice cream after the pizza challenge, being the first out in the sink or swim game, and dropping the gnome is so obviously potential mole behavior. I mean, it is, but in the same way that we are saying the clues that the mole say are so obvious about who is the mole, I think once you, everything looks like mole behavior once you know who mm-hmm. the mole is.
Yeah.
Because you can see those same kinds of, in that same episode where Bill buys the ice cream, A, so does Darwin, and B, Heather touches the bike. So everybody does things, some of which are honest mistakes, some of which could be active, you know, sabotage to try and throw people off of the actual mole trail.
Yeah. And what I really want, and of course, this is, here's a little something for our Hamilton fans out there. We need two seasons of the mole per game of the mole. We need the helpless season, and then we need the satisfied season. We need to see, like, everybody trying to figure out who the mole. We need to watch it not knowing who the mole is. And then I want to go back and look at all of them. And, like, we know at the back of our minds who the mole is. And then I want to see everybody else explaining how they figure out who the mole is.
Yeah.
And show the things. Like, there's a lot of stuff that they show Bill doing, but then they show somebody else taking the fall for it. Mm-hmm. Like, one of the examples that Bill cites in his book is that when they're trying to get to the train station, and Allie and Bribs are stopping off in a bar for a drink, Bill joins them in the bar and right. like orders another round just as they're about to leave to go get to the train. And they don't show Bill ordering the next round. They just yeah. show Allie and Bribs drinking and like making up the whole thing about the exemption. So there's a lot of stuff like that. And the same with the ice cream. They don't show Bill with the ice cream. They show Darwin with the ice cream. And they show
because Bill like eats his instantly.
I yeah. guess. Just like opens his jaw and swallows the ice cream whole. and then the whole thing, like nobody gets after them for buying ice cream because Heather touched the bike.
Right.
So I some of that is on production too, because I suspect that if Heather had not touched the bike, they might have had to make a bigger deal out of the ice cream. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff people break the rules and they don't get dinged for it.
Yeah. Also in Ben's feedback, kind of related to this, he says, I'm not sure if this happened in the US version of the show, but in the Australian version, it was revealed that the mole gets a heads up of the next day's games and potential ways to sabotage them. This happens when filming their one-on-ones, when they're talking to the producers, to camera confessionals. Do you think this is happening with Bill as well? I think it was, right? Like, I feel like Catherine talked about once they get to the reunion of season one, she's like, yeah, I would, like, the producers would tell me, you know, you want to be in this position for this task to best be able to, like, mess it up.
Yeah, they don't tell them everything that's happening in the games. Mm-hmm. They give them, like, a few nuggets of information that they can then use to figure out how they're going to sabotage. And like one of the things they told Bill was in the challenge with the gnomes, they said volunteer to go second because right. that's the easiest way to screw up what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, that obstacle course looked difficult.
It did.
You got to hold a greasy gnome and get it up that little like wooden slat over like a like a can of corn or something, and it's gonna yeah. like teeter totter over. No way on that rickety bike.
Yeah, it was basically they were telling him just go in there and do this challenge and you will fail.
And you will fail. Yeah,
you don't have to actively be the mole. You just have to be there and you'll fuck up.
Right. But as Catherine also says, like when they do that task right towards the end with the like where Steven has to get them to trust him to do various dangerous things that it turns out are not actually dangerous. She said, they didn't tell me anything about that. I didn't know that those things weren't real. Like they wanted my fear to be actual fear if I was afraid. And then she passed out. So, you know,
yeah,
it's a little bit of both, I think.
Yeah.
But there's definitely communication between the mole and production about what's going on.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be fun to be the mole if you just knew everything that was coming up. Like, you still have to be in there playing the game, or it's going to be really obvious. Mm-hmm. You need to be surprised by stuff. Maybe not to the point of fainting, but you need your reactions to what's coming up need to be genuine as well. So I get the sense that they give you, like, they give you teasers. They don't really give you what the game is. They just say, hey, here's what you might want to consider for this, and it might involve this. And yeah, so yeah. That's what I gleaned from it anyway.
Yes. Also, let's see. I think Ben also said, we know that Dorothy wins the game. However, she had the lowest score on the quiz the night Olavia was bribed with the $50,000, and therefore she was saved. Who do you think would have been the winner if Olavia does not take the bribe and Dorothy was eliminated? Ben says, personally, I think Al, if I remember correctly, was either one less correct answer or was slower on the quiz that eliminated him just before the final. And with Heather exhausted and emotional by the finale, I think it was Al's to win.
I mean, that's, I don't think it was Al just because of what Bill says in his book about Al, which I will get to that as well. In fact, no, we're not going to wait for that. I'm just going to read to you what he says, because I think it's useful. Okay. His actual quote about Al, he mentions that, unfortunately for Al, we became good enough friends that he would not seriously consider me as the mole. And one other thing about him, he believed in following the rules at all times. Could he be the mole? Well, maybe, but his penchant for following the rules exactly seemed to rule against that. And I don't think Al was a serious consideration for the mole after the first couple of weeks. So Al was so lawful good the whole time that it's likely, I think, that he gets eliminated sooner with Olavia still in the game. And I think, I don't know if Al makes it all the way to the end, because he's not correct on who the mole is. And remember, if Olavia is still in the game, everybody still thinks she's the mole.
Right.
It clearly does not throw them off the scent. I think a lot of people's games got busted when she walked away from the game.
Yeah. And I don't know if Heather and Olavia make the same coalition that Dorothy and Heather do, where the two of them team up and like, okay, we're going to take out the boys. And they successfully take out the boys. They take out Darwin, Bribs, and Al, so that they remain the final two along with Bill for the end of the season. I think Heather was suspicious of Olavia from the beginning, so I don't think she's going to at any point try and make that same coalition. Although maybe Olavia proposes the same argument to her that she did to Dorothy of, well, if I'm the mole, there's no reason for you to lie to me. And if I'm not the mole, then we can work together.
Yeah, and Olavia is such a smart player. It's really, it's kind of sad that she got such a raw deal there. But I also, this is one of two points in the game where there's a big sliding doors moment. And the other one we'll get to when we talk about Bill's book, because it's a much bigger topic. But I think the boot order is completely different if Olavia stays in the game, because everybody thinks she's the mole and they're not going to be disabused of that notion.
Yeah.
So
I think that's right. Nick Fishman said, I just want to say I find it so funny that this season Josh has been suspecting Al and Bribs so much, two of whom I never thought were the mole in 2001. I know in the mole book that many players suspected Bribs for non-TV show reasons, like him being away for interviews for extended times. I don't know anything about that. Because I didn't read the book.
Yeah.
Nick also says, I haven't heard Josh highlight any of the observable clues. How do you think he will react to the types of clues from this season? Do you think Josh is comparing Bill to Charlie has blinded him to the truth? Can you ask Josh for a winner pick in addition to his mole pick for the latter half of the season?
Yeah.
I'm curious who he thinks is going to make it to the end of the game.
Yeah, that's a very good question.
He's going to be very devastated next week.
Yeah, and I don't remember. I don't remember the part in the book where Bribs is away for interviews for so long that people think he's the mole. But I do remember people watching the show. He was one of the prime suspects for the mole. because like people didn't like him. They thought he was shady. They thought he was a jerk. And I'm not seeing any of that.
Yeah, that's like, really strange.
On the rewatch, it doesn't, I'm not getting that at all from him. Like, no, I remembered him being such a douche, and he's really not that much of a douche.
Yeah.
But, you know, we hated people on TV for reasons that are completely inconsequential now.
He's just like a pretty bland dude who loves his mom.
Yeah.
He's very excited to see his mom. I don't know.
Super bro-y.
Yeah. It will be interesting to see as we get down to the end. Because I wouldn't be surprised if even at the final three, Josh is not suspecting Bill.
That's weird to me because I feel like it's so obvious by the final three. And again, this was just because I had Bill pegged very early on and just sort of had my eye on him the whole time so that when people kept falling, and there's a question in here about this, but he stuck out like a sore thumb. Like he just sticks out of this group so hard.
Yeah. I could never overlook the sink or swim challenge when he can't make it 10 minutes in the pool treading water.
Yeah.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Well, this is actually our listener, Catherine, asked this question. She said that in the final episode of our season one podcast, I made a comment about the strategy I used to peg Catherine as the mole. And I didn't want to say it yet because I used the same strategy to peg Bill in season two. And that's what it is. It was just like, who is the least like any of these other people? Because for one thing, they're asking questions about the mole's life and about the demographics of the mole. And if there's one of these things that's not like the other things, this makes that person stand out as suspicious. And I really felt like if other people who were similar in mindset and demographic to Bill had gone further in the game, I would not have picked Bill out. Like all of the older people fall out of the game very early on. Mm-hmm. And then you just have Bill and a bunch of kids.
Yep.
And it's like, one of these things, not like the other thing. And, you know, the minute he drops out of the swimming challenge, it's like, you know, is can he really hang with these kids or is he the mole?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
And he doesn't talk much about strategy. I mean, you know, he's a smart guy. He's really sharp. And, you know, he's had this storied Navy career as well as he's a surgeon, which I don't think they ever talk about.
Yeah, it gets mentioned like in his like lower third in the first episode, and then it never gets brought up again.
So he's an admiral and he's a surgeon. So he's obviously a very smart guy, and you never get the sense that he's dumb. But he's also, the way he's approaching the game is just so different. And you would think that people are forming coalitions and people are working together, and you can't really, like, people, somebody has to be doing the same thing right. Like, two different people have to be doing the same thing right. And Bill's not doing the same thing as anybody else in the game at any point.
Interesting.
And it was kind of the same with Catherine. It was much later in the season that I figured that out. But she was the last woman standing. And she was also demographically kind of different from the other guy, from the other people in the game. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's where I went with that.
Yeah. Evan had additional feedback in the hypothetical if Dorothy goes home instead of a Lavia spot. His theory is that Heather and Katie put their answers on a Lavia still at the final seven and that Katie still goes home. And then in reality, after Katie left, Heather knew that Dorothy wasn't the mole since she and Katie targeted her as the mole, which led to Katie's execution, and formed a coalition with her. Oh, does the exact same thing happen except with Dorothy and Olavia in Dorothy's spot? This is what I was talking about that I think is less likely. And if Olavia and Heather made it to the end with Bill, does Heather win?
Yeah, that's... I really depends on how it really depends on how quickly Heather gets thrown off of who is the mole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think Evan makes a good point that if Heather knows that she and Katie are both going after Olavia and then mm-hmm. Katie gets eliminated based on that theory, that's probably got to throw Heather off of the Olavia track and looking for a new suspect.
Yep.
Evan did say, I had always wondered how Darwin in particular made it so far, despite being so wrong. Turns out everyone else was just as wrong. Yeah. And you hear that expressed from Dorothy in the next episode. She's like, why did you leave? Everybody thought you were the mole and we could have like gone to the end together.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very crazy. But anyway, that does feed into the other sliding doors moment we have from the series. And this was something that I found in Bill's book that I thought was kind of amazing. So apparently in the first two quizzes, Bribs was absolutely certain that Bill was the mole.
Oh,
and then after the second quiz, Darwin approaches him for coalition and he says, who do you think is the mole? And Bribs says, I think Bill is the mole. And Darwin's like, there is no way Bill can be the mole because here's how I answered the questions. And one of these questions, I didn't answer it for Bill and I'm still here, so obviously it's not correct. And Bribs immediately stops thinking Bill is the mole. So there's your other sliding doors moment.
Wow, yeah.
If Darwin does not throw Bribs off the scent, like how deep in the game, like does Bribs just run away with this?
Interesting. Yeah, it's tough because, I mean, you kind of have to take that information with a grain of salt that early on. With a cast this large, how many questions do you have to be getting right to stay in? Only one person goes home at a time. And if they got two questions right and you got three questions right, they go home. And you can't assume that just because you're still there, all of your answers are correct. So I think there was a bit of a leap in logic on Darwin's part.
Well, it's one of those LSAT logic level things. And it was basically he was writing down like every set of questions and trying to figure out like the strategy that they don't really talk about that I think it changes the way you look at this is that early in the game, if you don't know the answer, like there's going to be a bunch of questions that you have to get right in order to stay in. And then a bunch that are super specific that even people who know who the mole is are not going to get them. So you can kind of, if you can tell the difference between those questions, then you go to the questions where it's like there's two possible answers. And so you just pick the answer that applies to the most people. So did the mole drink red wine or white wine at dinner? If three people drank white wine, you say the mole drank red wine.
Right.
And this was one of the questions, I believe, and I'd have to go back and like find the whole passage, but Darwin had Bill in the wrong group mm-hmm. and had figured out like logically he had ruled him out because he was in this other group. And it turned out to be a fallacy, and he rode that fallacy all the way to the final six.
And Darwin's a lawyer, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
He's taken the LSATs.
Yeah. And it really is. It's like LSAT level thinking. And mm-hmm. once I had it elucidated, like what that quiz strategy is, it's like, oh, of course that's how you do it.
Yeah.
Duh. But I think in the moment, like watching the show, they don't ever make that clear that that's what you have to do.
No, they definitely don't. But that's certainly how I've thought about it. And it's tough as viewers because there are certain things, certain questions you can answer once you have a sense of who you think the mole is as they're showing you all of the questions. But some of them of like, did the person have this at dinner? It's like, well, I wasn't sitting at dinner with them, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's certainly the way to go about it, right? It's like, if you're not sure who the mole is, particularly early on, you answer whichever group captures more people. And even if that means you're excluding different people on different questions, the odds are still more or less in your favor compared to if you pick someone and you're just completely wrong, and the odds are that you will be early on in the game, you're more likely to get more questions wrong. Which kind of brings me to, I think, the last bit of email feedback that we have. Kevin asked, what do you think is the optimal number of contestants for a season? In the American version, at least, we've seen 10, 14, 7, 8, and 12 people. 7 and 8 are the celebrity seasons that they did mm-hmm. with far fewer people, if anybody out there does not know. Kevin says, I personally prefer 14. While it might be a little bloated, I'd rather have more mole than less mole, and 10 contestants goes by way too quickly. I do agree 10 is really small, and like things move really fast. It's like a 6-person tribe versus like a 8 or 10 person tribe on Survivor. But 14 is a lot. Like, who is Rob? I've watched this show so many times and I still have no idea who that guy is. I couldn't tell you a thing about him except that he came off like a sleazy car salesman. And who's the next person? Allie? Is that this season?
Yeah, that was Allie. Yeah, there's like, of the first 5 people out, the only one who really has a story is Patrick.
Right. Yeah. And I think 12 might be more of the sweet spot. 14 is so many for 42 minutes.
Yeah. And I'm finding the same thing with like Survivor seasons when they bring on 20 contestants. I mean, I know right off the bat, there's going to be 5 or 6 of them I'm not going to be able to remember after
ever,
they get off. Yeah.
Some it's of just whom so many, make it it's all so the many way stories. The yeah. yeah there's so many stories to try and tell. You want to get people invested in the players because that's why it's interesting to watch the game. And I want more mole rather than less mole too. But I think you get more like fun, unique, individual moments when you have a slightly smaller cast than you do with like this biggest group.
Yeah. And it gives you a little bit more. Give you a little bit more room to maneuver, but it is, I think within the game, you want more people rather than less, but
yes,
to watch the season, especially with how complicated the strategy on this show is, I think you want fewer people to watch, because I can tell you something interesting about every single person on the first season cast. And I could have done it before we did the whole podcast about it.
Right. Right. Including Manuel.
Yeah. You know, it's his first trip out of the country. Wanted to see Paris, man.
He got to have his night out in Paris. He gets like a very nice like farewell package for being the first person voted out. And I couldn't tell you anything about Rob or Allie or what people had to say about them when they left.
Yeah. And I mean, the only interesting things about, like, I think Rob and Lisa are both like what they do for a living.
Lisa.
Yeah, like Lisa was a person.
The beer salesman / assistant U.S. district attorney or something.
Yeah. That's the only interesting thing about her. It's like there's a team on The Amazing Race that you don't remember anything about them except that their Chiron said they were dating for 12 years and they were virgins. It's like this is like the dating 12 years virgins.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is that level of surprising combination.
It's like, I don't remember anything about them, except, you know, people are going to yell at me because they know I do. And I definitely do. But it's like the average person who watched that season, I say, you know, season 4 of Amazing Race, they'd be like, oh, yeah, dating 12 years virgins. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing. Like Rob was interesting because he had the hair and he was a magician.
Yes.
But
that's not even who I'm talking about. Bob.
You're talking about Bob. Yeah. So you don't even remember his freaking name. That's how memorable.
No, I know who Rob is. Okay, Rob, the magician that Anderson punched in the arm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Get punched by Bob. Anderson. You're memorable. Yeah. Oh, Bob is like, he's barely in it. He's in it for like 30 seconds and he's out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, you don't want the obvious, like, first boot energy. You don't need that person. I want to feel bad when the first boot goes out. I don't want to be like, oh, good, fewer people to keep track of.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. All right. So is that for listener feedback? Have we been through everything we want to talk about there?
I think that covers it. Yes. Quiz topic? I'm not looking at that email. Yeah. Spoiler for me.
Yeah. I've had a lot of people. I'm going to throw it out there to the listeners. I wasn't really advertising this widely, but as people have been emailing us, I've been saying, yeah, go ahead, do this. And people have done it unsolicited. I've been getting some pitches for quiz questions, and people have been writing like it comes as it ranges from, hey, you should make this the theme of your quiz one week, or have you thought about giving them this show, all the way to people just sending me like a whole ass completed quiz question. And so I'm making one of the upcoming weeks be listener submission week.
Nice.
And anybody that wants to write me one of our typical mole quiz questions, I am perfectly happy to air your question on the listener submission week quiz. I don't know which week that's going to be yet. And we have, I think, three so far, but I'm sure we can go longer. I know Zed and Josh are happy to do quizzes all night.
Oh, we love it. It's our favorite. but you can send those to molepatrol@robhasawebsite.com. Just make it clear in the title that it is about the quiz so that I know not to read it, because those emails go to both me and Jess, not just Jess. Mm-hmm. Some of them say, hi, Jess, and I'm reading them too.
I know, I feel bad about that.
But I won't read the quiz ones if you make it clear that it's about the quiz.
Yeah.
But that's where you can send those.
You can send those. But if you're sending us feedback, make sure that you have it say, hi, Jess and Zed.
Yeah, I'm here too.
Zed is here and they're reading it too. So we love the feedback. Obviously, yes. We got such great feedback from all of you for this week in particular. Yeah, and generally, you've all been really great about sending in feedback, and we very much appreciate that. So let's move on to talking about Bill's book. And once again, this book is called Reflections of the Mole, and it is available on Amazon in the Kindle store. And if you have Kindle Unlimited, you may read it for free. And I think it's like $7 if you don't. I don't recommend. It's not worth $7. If it's like, I'm going to double check the price on this, because if it's like, yeah, it is.
And from what I've heard, in addition to not wanting to give Amazon your money, you probably don't want to give Bill your money either.
I don't know. He's funny. But he's also, it's very much a self-published book. And it's also, I think it depends on how much you love Bill, honestly. It's $4.99 to buy it in the Kindle store if you have a Kindle. You can buy it in paperback for $15. You can probably find it on like ABE or some other independent retailer if you really want to read it and you don't want to give Jeff Bezos your money, which I definitely don't blame you if you don't. But anyway, I took this bullet because I already have Kindle Unlimited. So you don't have to read this, because I'll tell you basically how this book goes. This book is basically a combination memoir and play-by-play breakdown of everything that happens in season two of The Mole to a frightening level of detail, which I guess if everybody on the show was taking copious notes, even if Bill is not the person taking notes.
Which Bill wasn't, yeah.
There's so many ways that Bill is phoning in this mole stint. It's really hilarious. But what he does is he basically interweaves his experience on the mole with a lot of information about him personally that I guess is interesting. But I kind of skimmed a lot of it, to be honest. And then he talks about leg by leg. Here's what he did on the mole. Here's what the producers told him to do. Here is how it shook out. Here is what happened on the quiz. And here's who went home. Then he throws it to whoever went home and has them, like, he asked them all to email him with their thoughts about what happened and why they went home and who they thought had been the mole and where they went wrong. And every single person except one wrote back to him and told him what they were thinking.
Wow. He did quarantine questionnaires with everybody.
Did in 2007.
He was ahead of the
game. Yeah. So Zed, do you want to guess who the person is who didn't write him back?
Oh, I hope it was Olavia.
Olavia wrote him back.
Ugh, I want her to be having better things to do with her life than answering emails from Bill.
She is very clear that she has a lot of great things going on in her life.
Good. I'm glad. I'm happy for her.
She talks about like what her job is and how she's very, very happy. And she's having a much better life than she did when she was on the mole.
Good.
Yeah.
Was it Patrick?
It was Patrick. He was still 100% mad.
Okay. I'm counting that as a quiz win for me.
Yeah. 1 point for the quiz. And Patrick is hilarious. Like the whole breakdown of like, nobody really likes Patrick from day one. And he's the only person who refuses to contribute to the book. And he apparently like stormed off the set. And it was
when he lost.
Yeah. Well, he thought, yeah, when he lost. And he was one of these people that applied for all of the reality shows and really wanted to be on Survivor and was kind of bitter that he wasn't on Survivor.
Wild. It's like,
oh, Patrick, I want better things for you as well.
I don't think Survivor would have gone super well for him.
No, I kind of think
based on his evident lack of social skills.
Yeah, and he is one of those people, and you know, I'm sure you've met people like this out in the world, Zed. You've met people that watch a lot of Survivor and kind of miss the point of what Survivor is. And they watch the show thinking, I want to be on that show. Why am I not on that show? I'd be amazing at it. And it's like, no, because you're kind of bad at the one thing you have to be good at.
Right.
And this was sort of like from day one, like nobody wanted to be anywhere near Patrick.
Except for Katie. Like, Patrick's edit is kind of interesting because he's shown in a fairly positive light until the episode where he goes home and then the show just like dunks him in a trash can as hard as they possibly can.
I mean,
but before that, you see like Katie trusting him with her rosary before she does the bungee jump. She's talking about how he feels like fatherly to her. Myra and Patrick get along well when they're doing the costume running up the Swiss Alps task to get to the train station. And then
apparently Patrick like volunteered to wear the Speedo.
Of course he did. But then there's like such a serious heel turn in the episode where he goes home. It's almost like something happened. And all of a sudden everybody's mad at Patrick.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the journal catastrophe or what.
I mean, it was sort of the journal catastrophe. And I'm really, when we get back to our finale, I'm going to reread all the Patrick stuff because I recall that it was fascinating stuff. Like nobody trusted him from the. Yeah. Oh, here we go. I found it in the book. So I will do a little bit of dramatic reading.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait.
Patrick was interesting. We did become friends of a distant sort after the show and chatted several times. However, he came into the game with a definite idea of how it should be played and was very aggressive at it. And it seemed to me felt free to backstab and lie to get ahead. I really think he was anticipating being on Survivor and had adopted his strategy accordingly. He did not go out of his way to be friendly or make friends. Unfortunately for him, in this particular game, you have to have the ability to exchange lots of information with everyone else daily or you were not going to survive. So his direct inquisitorial manner, devoid of a soft side, was not one that endeared him to the others. He didn't seem to care. That was the way he chose to play the game. Several of us agreed that if he were the mole, the last three or four players would probably commit either homicide or suicide before the time in Europe ended.
Jeez.
Ouch.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal.
Big yikes. Yeah, and there's a lot in there about Patrick being kind of creepy to all of the women, mm-hmm. which they mention in brief on the show, but they don't really show him doing it at all.
And yeah, they like, only show it like with Heather at one point where he like comes to hug her in the Speedo and she doesn't want that and he like does it anyway.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm trying to see if I can find like any other Patrick related minutia, but that was the main thing. Like Bill is less kind to Patrick than the show was, if you can believe that.
Well. Yeah. He's like, you're making the olds look bad.
Yeah. So there's some other fun. We got some other fun trivia bits. The main thing, like I read this in the book and I had to put it down because I was laughing too hard. So in the Little John and Little Jane challenge, Bill was standing like a psycho because the wetsuit didn't fit him.
I think you may have told Josh by that offline. Yeah.
Yeah. I know I texted you that like the second I saw it. And it's I cannot wait to tell Josh that.
Yeah, because, he does say on the show, he's like, do we have to zip them all the way up?
Yeah, because his would not zip all the way up.
Yeah, because it's like, not happening for him.
Yeah, he's like stuffed into it like a sausage. Does not excuse him like later on also standing like a psycho in other areas. He's not wearing a wetsuit, but he's still standing like a psycho. But...
Oh man, once you see it you can't unsee it, and then it's just everywhere.
Yeah. I learned that Darwin didn't get to eat his ice cream because Bill just like housed his, and then Darwin gets on the van with his ice cream, and the producer slapped it out of his hand and threw it on the floor and yelled at him.
Oh, that's so upsetting. $5,000 ice cream that you don't even get to eat.
I know that was,
oh man, that's brutal.
Yeah. And let's see, apparently someone lists their favorite kind of food as edible. And people were tweeting at me very upset about that. And the book reveals that it was Olavia that did that. And that explains, I think that tells you a lot about who Olavia is as a person. Like, no wonder everybody was suspicious of her because all of her questions were answered that way. But Bill's questionnaire answers are even more interesting because Bill didn't fill them out himself. This is the best thing that I think I learned out of the entire book is when Bill was applying to be on the show, like he just sort of threw a tape together and sent it in and they liked his personality, but he didn't feel like he wanted to fill out all that paperwork. So he made his wife do it. And she made up half the questions. Like she just made up the answers. And so production kept getting frustrated with him because they would need to compile what the quizzes were. They needed Bill to talk about it with the other contestants. And they're like, so what'd you put for this? And he's like, I don't know. And like, okay, go back and read your questionnaire again and remember what you put. Or he would answer them and they'd say, that's not what you put on the questionnaire, Bill. We made the quiz based on you saying this.
Yeah, not the ideal candidate to be the mole, the guy who wants to do absolutely no work and can't remember answers to questions because he didn't answer them.
Yeah, that so that I thought was entertaining. And it's kind of like, well, that's kind of in line with the Bill you see. It's like he's having a good time and he's, you know, he's taking the trip. He's enjoying himself. But then when it comes time to tread water for 10 minutes, he can't do it.
He's like, nah.
Nah, yeah.
He'll be the ox pulling the pizza freezer. But that's about it for Bill.
Yep. And I don't remember if this was actually on the show, but they talk about they're baking the pizza dough and the pizza is full of like little unidentifiable specks. Mm-hmm. And Bill says what the specks are.
Oh, no.
So apparently there's a tablecloth on the table.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's like that Italian tablecloth, like the green and white checks. And apparently they're making the pizza dough and they're making it on the tablecloth. And then Bill lifts up the pizza dough and like half the checks are gone. So all the specks were like green dye from the tablecloth.
Oh, no.
But nobody died.
Nobody died. The tablecloth was dyed, but apparently not very well.
Yes, apparently not.
I'm glad it wasn't like bugs because that was definitely a thought.
I'd rather eat dye than bugs, for sure.
Yeah. I'll take a little bit of baked chemicals, I guess, in my pizza over bugs.
I mean, they make a good point. The oven was very hot. It probably killed anything that was still alive.
Yeah, they kill all the bad stuff in the oven, Katie says. Yeah.
Exactly. And then, of course,
those slightly baked pizzas, I'm sure, were perfectly healthy to eat.
Yeah, they were a little bit floppy.
They were in the oven for a period of time. Was it long enough? No.
Long enough to kill all the germs, maybe. Yes. Probably not long enough to cook the pizza.
I don't think so.
And then a couple of fun tidbits from Funhouse Night.
Yes.
So we know that, of course, on Funhouse Night, Bill wins the opportunity to not stay in the funhouse, which is not rigged. He just did.
Oh, wow.
He was supposed to go and spend the night. I mean, it'd be easier to be the mole if you, you know, they show you the tiny bubbles room and you're like, no, F that.
You're like, no.
Yeah. But apparently they say on the show, you're going to go get spa treatments and stay in a fancy hotel. And they were supposed to get him a massage, but due to the language barrier, that's not what they ordered. And so Bill did not get a massage. And the person who was supposed to give him the massage did not stick around. You know what they call other things. Yeah, you know what I mean.
I do.
Yes. And Al was in that room all night and he really had to pee, but he's not gonna break the rules because he's Al. So he starts to unzip and the producers are running in like, no, you cannot pee on the floor. And he's like, well, I got it. And so they ended up like this was one of those portions of the show not affecting the outcome. He got to go have a potty break because he was
good.
Be on the
I'm glad
in this like Italian villa.
I mean, good on him to be like, okay, fine. I'm sitting here for 8 hours and you're not going to let me sleep and I'm going to be awake and aware that I need to go to the bathroom and I have to be on this stupid metal bed frame. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to follow your rules. Is this what you want? And no, it is not. It is not what they want.
Yeah. And there was also a point where Bill lobbied to get to have conditions improve for all of the contestants because he threatened to quit the show. And everybody's like, well, we have to give them what he wants because yeah. Bill is the only one who can't quit the show.
Yikes.
So I kudos to Bill for recognizing what his leverage is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the final piece of trivia is that I wanted to highlight is that Anderson did not know who the mole was until mm-hmm. shortly before the final quiz when two of the producers were talking about it without realizing he was in the car with them.
Yep. Oh, he was in the car.
Yeah, he's in the car.
I've read on Wikipedia that it says, like, as with the previous season, he didn't know who the mole was until, like, he overheard a producer's conversation the day before
yeah.
the finale. No, but it doesn't say on Wikipedia that it's because they were fully in the car.
They were fully in a car talking, and they were like, oh, hi, Anderson.
Oh, also, oops. You're here, host of the show. Okay.
But how is it not obvious?
Yeah. You would think Anderson would know, of all people. He had figured out Catherine by the end, he said.
Yeah, but this one, it boggles my mind because the other thing that I think, and I can't remember who tweeted this at me, so I apologize and you should get credit and at me and then I'll make sure you get the credit for this. The other thing that is obvious is that they are not going to choose the same type of person two seasons in a row. So
right.
who is the opposite of Catherine on this cast?
Mm-hmm.
And that's who they got.
Yeah. That might have been in an email too. Sorry yeah. about that. That we
sorry
are not,
person with the email.
Yeah, but I think that is a good theory. That is correct. Yeah,
yeah.
They're not going to do another woman. Probably not another younger person. Yeah, so we
probably
get,
not an attorney.
yeah. So we get Charlie. We get season two Charlie, which is yeah. Bill,
yeah.
who's nothing like Charlie except that he's an old white dude.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird that. That it's weird that Josh just latches onto this.
He just loves doing the Charlie voice. Mm. I have definitely encountered Charlie on other podcasts that are not The Mole.
Yes, as have I. I think you can probably encounter Charlie just like having a conversation with Josh. Yeah, Charlie is in him now.
A lot of his voices just sort of like if he's doing a caricature of someone, sort of just devolve into Charlie eventually, even if they sound nothing like Charlie in real life.
Yeah, he's like Paul Rudd in The Leprechaun.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're all Charlie. I think Charlie's just waiting to come out.
Yes, we are Charlie. Charlie is Legion.
Well, I'm glad Charlie lives on anyway.
In this way, yes.
In this way and maybe not in others.
Yeah, I think he is not on this plane anymore, as I recall.
And RIP Charlie. So, Zed, I think that brings us to the end of our spoiler special.
I think it does.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this and all other Mole Patrol podcast episodes. We apologize again if you did not heed 10 minutes of warnings up front and let yourself get spoiled. I don't want to hear that feedback, but if you have other feedback, like perhaps things you want us to bring up to Josh at the end of the season or things you want us to slip into the conversation as we are gearing up toward Anderson's Funhouse, I would love to hear them. We want to hear that kind of feedback. We want to hear, what are you thinking of the show so far? What else do you want us to ask Josh? What else do you want us to have in the quiz? These are all good things to deliver in terms of feedback, and we want to hear from you. So you can tweet at us. Do not tweet at Josh, but you may tweet at Hard Rock Hope, which is Zed, and you may tweet at Haymaker Hattie, which is me. You may also email us, molepatrol@robhaswebsite.com. That goes to both Zed and me, so you should greet us both accordingly. And also, we wanted to throw you our pronouns as well. So you can refer to me as she, her, and Zed is they, them. So that's just helpful information for everybody. I think sometimes we're not upfront about that and we should be more conscientious about everybody giving our pronouns before we ask people to contact us. So that's my spiel about feedback and really give us anything. We want Andersongs too. Have you been inspired to have Andersongs? If we don't get 25 song parodies of Tiny Bubbles, you're all fired.
Yeah.
I quit.
Josh should feel like he's listened to Tiny Bubbles for 8 hours by the time we get to the end of our Ander Songs segment, whenever that does happen. I know Nick Fishman and Aaron Robertson are going to greatly bolster our Ander Songs numbers. They've had quite like discography prepared even before our season began. You can let them dominate, but don't. Match them. Bring in your own. We want to hear from everybody. They're such a treat. Unbegettable still pops into my head sometimes. Like, what an iconic moment. So if you have song parodies, you know, Survivor hasn't been around. We haven't had the Wiggle Room. We haven't had the Wand Off. If you have creative juices flowing, send us your songs. We want to hear them. We love to laugh. We love to laugh with you guys. And then Josh and I don't have the stress of the quiz when we're just listening to music. So
it's true. Would you rather take the quiz or would you rather listen to Tiny Bubbles for 8 hours?
Oh, boy. It's tough. That's a tough call, I got to say. I'd take the quiz.
Okay. What if Josh would rather listen to Tiny Bubbles for 8 hours or watch The Strain for 8 hours?
That's what I was going to say. He'd pick Tiny Bubbles.
For sure. He might regret it, but... Yeah, so that's our show, friends. Please send us your feedback and your Ander songs, and we will be back next week breaking down episode 8 of The Mole, and then we're just going to cruise right on into the finale. Eventually, we will have a full season recap where we go back and we let Josh look at all of the things, all of these painfully obvious clues that we missed, like who doesn't know Bill is a Pisces, seriously? And we'll be able to fill him in on some of these more interesting trivia facts. So if you've read Bill's book and there's something you want us to bring up to him specifically, please let us know that as well. So I guess that's our show. Thanks, Zed, for doing this with me.
Yeah, thanks, Jess. This was so fun. I love making fun of Josh when he's not here for all the things he doesn't know, because there's a whole Discord where people talk about all the stuff I don't know about Final Fantasy. So I get my one episode for us to talk about all the secrets before they're not secrets anymore.
Yep, we get to spend an hour and a half dunking on Josh in ways that he can't defend himself.
And he'll never listen to this, so he'll never know.
Wonderful. It's so great when you can have a whole podcast about someone knowing they're never going to listen to it, because... What's worse is when you do one of those podcasts, then they do listen to it in there a couple of times.
Well, Josh, if you're listening to this, we love you very much.
This podcast would not be possible without Josh Wiggler. So definitely the only thing I want you to tweet at Josh Wiggler in regards to The Mole is thank you, Round Howard, for doing the podcast with Jess and Zed. It makes my life better. And we know it would not be possible without you.
Yeah. And you have to refer to it as the podcast with Jess and Zed. If you say Mole Patrol or the podcast about the mole, he won't see it. He's got those things locked down tight in his Twitter filters.
Exactly. It's like how you say the artist formerly known as Prince.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to refer to it in terms that get around the filters.
Get around the filters. Yeah.
All right. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you again, Zed. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre, who edited this and posted it. And we'll see you next week with regular Mole Patrol coverage. Mole Patrol, now be your attribution. They're gonna tell you all about the latest execution. And the Mole Patrol, they're looking for clues. They're trying to get a call from